Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Why is it that with sparkling water, I'm always playing guessing games with what flavor I'm drinking? Is it citrus? Is it aluminum can flavored? Not sure. Sparkling ice, though, they really mean flavor. Like in-your-face flavor. Orange mango, black raspberry. Don't even get me started on the strawberry lemonade. Kiwi strawberry slid right into my taste buds' DMs last night and let them know who's boss. No subtleties there and no sugar either. But it does have vitamins and antioxidants. Find sparkling ice at a major grocery store or club retailer near you. Sparkling ice. Anything but subtle.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
I had to go about it, write it out, and find it myself. And there's some stories I can tell.
What a day. Final Word Daily brought to you by Westfield London and Westfield Stratford City. More extra, less ordinary. Adam Collins with you. Cam Ponsonby with me. He's at Hyderabad. He's going to sum up a staggering day to complete this first test match in the space of 30 seconds. Good luck.
Adam, it was the match of many miracles. Had it just been the comeback from a 190-run deficit, it would have been amazing. Had it just been the fact it was India losing their fourth match in just 46 home test matches, it would have been amazing. Had it just been a context as close and exciting, it would have been amazing. It was all three factors combining together to create one of the great modern test matches, a match that everyone who's been working on it has been talking about in the years they've been watching, covering as a cricket, as a professional or a fan. It's up there with the very best. It's been an absolute pleasure to be here. Can't wait to talk about it more.
So all up, the victory margin's 28 runs. Another close win for England. They have a habit of doing this. They bowl at India for 202 after setting them 231 runs for victory. They added 104 runs in the opening session today to their overnight tally, taking that to 420. Light it up. Ollie Pope, 196 of the best, and gets out with a reverse slap. It's meant to be something like that. They're the numbers, but this is kind of one of those days, I think, Cam, where we just should just talk about our feelings a little bit to start the show. Like, we don't need to convince anyone who's watching or listening to this that Test cricket is different, that it hits different because of the build-up, the emotional investment over 4 or 5 days or whatever it works out to be. The payoff is so substantial. But we should talk about that more often. With Test cricket in the gun at the moment, commercially in various different parts of the world, all of the challenges that Test cricket faces outside of, say, the old big three, or especially India, Australia and England. We need days like today to celebrate it. A 28-run margin at Hyderabad, an 8-run margin at the Gabba, two blokes on debut taking sevenfers from nowhere to win the test for their respective nations. The fact that it is such a high bar to beat Australia at Australia at the Gabba only happened twice since 1988-89. And in the case of beating India in India, as you say now, four times over the last 12 years or whatever it works out to be. This is an extraordinary day, and we should talk about that. We should explain and remind each other, if nothing else, that we are so fortunate to have this as the pinnacle of the sport. And today was such a great example of that. A come-from-behind victory like we've rarely seen for England there. The biggest margin on a first innings lead that's been overturned in India before is 64 runs before today. Now it's 190. They've smashed that record, England. The belief and the purpose they showed in their second innings, principally due to Ollie Pope, and then to have that group, that unheralded attack, that inexperienced attack, find a way to make it work without their main spinner, Jack Leach, who barely bowled. Did play his role, but barely bowled. It's just one of those very special days, and we just need to, I think, start the show by acknowledging all of that.
Yeah, I think there's going to be an amazing interview done or feature done in a few months when West Indies come to England, and you're going to get a sit down with Tom Hartley and Shamar Joseph, and they're going to talk through their respective introductions to Test cricket and how it compares and contrasts. I do think Tom Hartley, look, we've joked on this show before about Tom Hartley was given one of the roughest hands ever to come into Test cricket. They said, can you be Axar Patel, please, a bloke who averages 9 on home soil? And it was looking like, it was looking laughable, it was looking awkward and embarrassing. I felt very uncomfortable for him in that first innings. When his first ball got hit for 6, he was going at 10s, 11s, 12s. It was genuine worst nightmare stuff. You worried, you feared for kind of, you feared he could become a pub quiz question in 20, 30 years, and people go, fucking hell, do you remember when England picked that lad Tom Hartley to go out to India and win them a 5-match series? That was funny. Mm. And he's come back from that match of 2 days ago. I can't imagine how poorly he slept on day one of this test match. To claim the second best figures by an England spinner on debut, I don't know if I think that's a good stat. I think there's a bit few too many caveats in there for me. I just think the fact he's got 7 for is pretty remarkable, and it leans into everyone's kind of favourite stories, sporting stories, of kind of coming back from the depths of despair and a point where you go, is this really me, am I going to fit in here, and then winning your team a match in the most extreme of conditions.
It's a fairy tale. I mean, being hit for 6 first ball and all that wider context that you refer to there. All the history, the weight of history, knowing that you could become a quiz question, right? A friend of mine said that. Said his first ball was hit for 6. In all probability, his final ball will be hit for 6. It'll be his only test match. And that was just, you know, it's easy to take the piss, but it did have that energy to it. He did struggle to contain on day 2. But to bowl as well as he did today, to get those early wickets, the 2 close in catches from Ollie Pope, getting one to go straight on with the arm to blow the pad off of Rohit Sharma, so difficult to beat Rohit on the inside edge. And then to have that composure with the caught and bowled moment, and then to come back and do it again just when India looks like for 5 minutes there that Ashwin and KS Bharat were going to steer them towards victory or at least get to day 5, it was Hartley again. And at the very end as well, with Siraj and Bumrah batting together and adding 25, one more over in the day, last over of the extra half an hour, and he does it again. Like, fairy tale is the only word that comes to mind, as it is with Shamar Joseph. And you're right, like, these two players side by side, all that emotion in the Australian commentary boxes from Brian Lara and Carl Hooper and Ian Bishop, and it's not quite the same with England beating India. It's a different kind of dynamic with the West Indies at the moment. But yeah, it is a joyous thing. And Tom Hartley now having his place in history, Shamar Joseph having his place in history, who would have thought that was even remotely viable 72 hours ago? It's stunning.
Well, to touch on that a bit further, I think I was thinking two things today. One, both him and Rehan Ahmed played absolute gems with the bat. And the strange thing about when Tom Hartley contributed with 34 and kind of they added another 50 or 60 runs with Ollie Pope, weirdly, with every moment he was kind of improving his performance and improving his team's place in the team, he was probably making himself feel a bit better internally, but he was also increasing the pressure on himself in the kind of holistic sense of the match. Because say he gets bowled second ball, oh, unlucky Tom, that happens. Oh, well, you only had 160 defend, so that you're never gonna defend that. Actually, the better he played with the bat, the more pressure he then put himself onto with the ball, because he was effectively one of England's premier spinners, with Jack Leach not able to bowl as much as he would have done. And that comes in the context of, he just did the post-match presses, and we were just talking to him, where he was asked, when did you find out you were going to open the bowling? And he went, Baz told me. He went, fancy the first over, mate? And he was like, ha, what? And it was that kind of like double take of like, oh my God, we've only got one seamer. Like, someone's going to have to do it, and it's going to be me. I'm going to be opening the bowling in India on my first test match. He bowled in the third over of today because Mark Wood took one over. The theory that Steve Harmison had was that it was just a case of like trying to get a tiny bit of lacquer off just to give Hartley something a bit more to grip, just to make him feel that bit more comfortable. And yeah, I mean, he took the first 3 wickets of the innings, 2 in an over to get Jaiswal, who'd given him nightmares in the first innings, then Shubman Gill a couple balls later. And he said that was the moment he went, oh my God, we're in, like, this is happening. A remarkable, remarkable 24, 48, 96 hours for Tom Hartley.
I also think credit to Ben Stokes in all of this, like having the faith to back Hartley in. I go back to day one, the way that Stokes was cheering Hartley on with every time he hit the ball. I think it was a brisk 24 from 24 balls or whatever it was, trying to show faith in him. the conventional thing to have done on afternoon one when Hartley was copping tap would have been to have, you know, get the boy off, you know, get him out of the attack. We'll come back tomorrow, and we'll try again. You know, we'll let him sleep through his nerves and see whether he can recover and be better for the run. You know, you see that. That's what happens with young spinners. But instead, Stokes bowled him for 9 overs on that first night. He bowled more overs than anybody. And I know he went for plenty. I know it wasn't pretty, but it's just the fact that he knew he had the captain's backing. And similarly today, with the way he batted, you know, there'll continue to be this dynamic, I think, where England have a poor day at the office. And I put this on social media yesterday. Like, oh, Bazball, it's a lie. It doesn't exist. It's not real. It's confected. Saw some absolute gibber on social media a couple of days to this effect as well. The way that Stokes leads this side is the reason why they get 240 on afternoon one, and it becomes a first innings versus fourth innings game. You know, the second and third effectively cancel each other out. England of 3 years ago are getting bowled out for 140, not 240.
Yeah.
And Hartley is part of that with the bat on day one, the faith shown in him. And you can look at Stokes' record as captain now, by the way. He's led England in 20 test matches, and they've won 14 of them. That is a very impressive body of work. If he didn't captain another test match, he would go down as a... And 14 of the 19 have been since he was full-time, because the first one was when he was the acting captain down at Southampton during the pandemic when Joe Root had a baby, or Joe Root's wife had a baby. So that, in a way, doesn't really count to the sample size since he took on the job alongside Brendan McCullum. And a lot of them have been close. They're so bloody watchable, Cam. I mean, you go through it. In the last 14 months, they've had test matches you would define as a close finish in Rawalpindi, in Multan, in Wellington, Edgbaston, Lords, Leeds, the Oval, and now today. They haven't won all of them, but they have this inbuilt belief that they can take it deep, and most of the time they come out on top. And that is a major part of the Ben Stokes leadership story, I think.
Yeah, I was thinking about those three in particular, Rawalpindi, Wellington, and then today. I was lucky enough to have been at all three of those, and that was a bit of a pinch me moment today, just being sat out on the press box, kind of looking over the match going like, yeah, like, it doesn't really get much better than this. I want to lean into that further, but doing so in... This isn't a criticism of Bazball, but it's something that I find a shame, or just a bit sad, is because the whole thing is like, let's enjoy all of it. Let's enjoy what it's like to be an England cricketer. Let's not get too kind of wound up and like obsessed with results. Yes, it releases that pressure and it allows people to play this free-spirited cricket, but it means on the flip side, Stokes was so calm and cool and just level in the talks afterwards. He was like, we don't want to get too high on this, we don't want to get too ahead of ourselves, it's a long series, we know what we want to achieve, like, I'm so proud, blah blah blah, but let's not go overboard with it. And I wanted to be there. I was like, no, go mental, lose yourself, this is the most incredible thing, you're going to look back on this in 40 years time and it's going to be one of the kind of standout achievements of your cricketing career, and just kind of such a happy personal memory as well. He did say it in terms of his captaincy, that it was the best one. He ranked it as the highest. But I just kind of... I hate when I hear teams cast off losing as learning, because I think, oh, God, like, let it hurt a little bit. And I also hate on the flip side, which you have to have if you're going to take... You can't say losing is learning. If you're going to say you can't get too high or too low, you can't also get too high as well as too low. But then in that moment, when you see these guys who've just had done something that people across the world dream of doing, going... We'll put our trousers on tomorrow, one sock at a time, all this stuff. I'm like, oh, mate, like, just enjoy it. Like, please enjoy it. It's the most amazing thing you've just experienced and achieved.
Yeah, well it's kind of going back to what you said on evening one, that everything needed to go right for England to win the test match. And they've had 2 days where, broadly speaking, everything has. Well, not 2 full days, because, of course, they did have a mini collapse on day three. And you know, India did get close today after, at one stage, they were reduced to 95 for 4 when Akshar was caught and bowled. So that's when it felt like it was game on, right? So there's the two poke catches always in the game, under the lid. Brilliant work there getting Jaiswal and Gill, the two young tyros who, you know, they get away. If they're none for 80 like they were on night one, that scoreboard pressure wouldn't have quite been there. And it did have that direction of travel with Jaiswal batting with Rohit. But on 42, they saw that off. 2 wickets, bang, bang.
Yeah.
And then, as I mentioned before, the Rohit leg before, when they were on 63, Akshar promoted up the order, change of order to see what they could do, at caught and bowled with the scores on 95. And then there's the Stokes moment. You know, we already mentioned his captaincy, but Cam, you know, the little underarm, backhander, indoor cricket style, Stokes on one leg, in the same way that Jack Leach is on one leg, in the same way that Shamar Joseph's on one foot bowling today when he didn't expect to be able to bowl. Again, this is about willing oneself to peak performance, and Stokes being able to do it at that exact moment to Jadeja, who is the definition of a match winner in a situation like that.
It was incredible. And if you watch it back, in live time, I went, has he thrown that left-handed? Because he's backhanded it at the kind of stumps, and he's at mid-on to Jadeja. And the way he's running, I'm like, that he has to have picked that up, dived, and then backhanded it with his left hand. That's the only way that angle works. And actually, he ran around, kind of caught the ball, or fielded the ball whilst he was almost face-on. Then his leg swung around the other way, and so he backhanded it with his right hand. So his legs were facing the direction he'd already come in. It was the most remarkable piece of athleticism, skill, just kind of magic. And also the idea that because no one was thinking there was a run out on, they went, oh, that could be a bit tight, but whatever. His feet are facing the wrong way. And then everyone started celebrating. There's this amazing moment where you see on the TV, Zoom afterwards, Stokes either says, that's out, or he goes, is that out? And you've got all his mates running towards him going, like,
it's Duckett who goes up to him and says, Duckett goes up and goes, Ben, it's out. And then he's like, oh right, it's out. Like, he needed to have that reinforcement from a colleague kind of thing.
Was really, like, that was the moment where you realised England were completely in the ascendancy. But to go back to the moments where you talk about Axar being promoted, and in particular there were two moments where I went, oh, England have a chance here. And it was when Rohit Sharma started reverse sweeping, and I went, oh, he's going away from his conventional plan. I was in the TalkSport box at the time, and Kevin Peterson was on commentary, and he went, whoa, like, I've watched Rohit Sharma bat for close to a decade. This lad doesn't reverse sweep. He's changing his plans here. That's one, an acknowledgement of they're having to adapt to what England are presenting them. And two was when Axar Patel came out of five. It is something he's done before, away to Bangladesh a couple of years ago in a match that was won by three wickets, and Ravi Ashwin down at number nine got them over the line. So there was a lot of like mirrors happening here. But that was the first point where I realised that India were kind of bending the knee a bit to England's game plan, because until that point they'd ruled the roost. It was kind of a case of, we don't need to adjust for you because we're better than you. And at that point where they had to change their plans, bring Axar up the order, that's when I realised for the first time India realised that they were in a match, as opposed to England trying to snatch this remarkable victory.
And I thought the other part that looked a bit skittish was when KL Rahul used the review. So a word for Root getting KL with one that moved prodigiously off the surface. And Jack Leach playing his role. I know he's got that knee that's the size of a football at the moment. But Shreyas Iyer, who was just building a little bit, you know, he's running between the wickets, was looking good. And you're thinking, you know, Shreyas Iyer can be the kind of guy, if he bats for an hour and a half, can take a game away from you. But getting that one to spin sharply and pouched by Root, that slipped. So the other two spinners having a say, in addition to Hartley. I thought that was, I do think it's worth acknowledging that India did some strange things, especially towards the end. It did feel like things were turning when KS Bharat was batting with Ashwin. Now, bear in mind, the ball to get KS Bharat's an absolute beauty and hit top of off from Hartley, not diminishing that piece of bowling at all. But when they came together, they needed 112 runs. And then Ashwin, as soon as he loses his partner, he goes for a dance and a swing. Yeah. And they're not far from that point where we're hitting the 30-minute threshold. And then in the final over, when Siraj was batting quite nicely, 12 from 20, with Bumrah, they were both playing their role. They were, as you know, obviously 28 runs from victory, for it was the last wicket. Overnight does funny things to fielding teams when they need one wicket to win, or indeed when a fielding side just needs to go a little bit harder the next morning. It would have felt like England were the ones under the pump rocking up tomorrow. Alex Bowden, excellent cricket writer on the game, written beautifully about overnight before and how it does funny things to people. If they get to stumps, five more balls, we're having a very different conversation right now. So I thought that was poor from Siraj, and you can't judge him on his batting because obviously he's not there to do that. But it wasn't great cricket sense from Ashwin, who's a genius. I don't know what he was thinking. And later, Siraj, when there was just one over to see out, and they would have gotten through and had hope tomorrow. But
We'd have been having a very underwhelming conversation of going, oh, blimey, like, it's still so much has happened, and yet we don't know the end. It's like it'd be kind of left on a cliffhanger for next Sunday, line of duty, and find out the next episode's 5 minutes long. You're like, oh, okay, well, right, we'll find out what happens. But I thought Ashwin and Bharat was a bit strange, and they just hit the brakes. They were going about 1.5 and over. And the only reason I think that is strange is because the more time you're dealing in two currencies. You're dealing in runs, you're dealing in time. And the more time that India put into that wicket, the harder their runs were going to be to get. And so it was kind of like, guys, if you want to score these runs, you need to keep the tempo up a little bit. There's a little bit of a one-day sense to it in terms of you need to look after your run rate, because otherwise you're going to find yourself batting on a wicket that's 60 overs older and more difficult. I think Ashwin was a bit of a, maybe he, at that point he thought, I need to take initiative. Say he clears the ropes to go to six. It's cool. What a great counter-attacking batting by Ravichandran and Ashwin. And you go, oh, brilliant. And it did look odd. I think I agree with you there. But I imagine he was being quite calculated about it, thinking this is actually the prime time to attack when they think they're just about to... Maybe I'm being generous there. I'm not too sure. And Siraj... That is genuinely my reaction to it. It was just a case of, all right...
Look, he's an 11. He's an 11 and that's fine. It's more the fact that he actually looked okay.
Yeah.
He looked okay and they were negotiating the risks pretty well, and they were sucking a little bit of life out of the game.
Sure.
Again, they added 25 of the 54 they needed when they came together. So, you know, marginal gains in a closely fought match like this often are looking at the smaller things, I suppose, in the wider picture. But yeah, Hartley getting his fifer with that ball that picked up Bharat. So, that's one that'll be replayed for a long time, one that spun square. You know what we'd be saying if this had gone to day five? We'd be talking about before both of us were born, 1982, at the MCG with Border and Thompson on the final day and leading 37 to win and 30,000 people showing up to the MCG. It would have been crazy had they needed like 25 and coming back tomorrow. So I feel like we've been robbed of that on one hand, but on the other hand, I mean, you can't quibble on a day like today, which gave us so much.
I reckon I wouldn't have been talking about that, to be honest. I think that you've just informed me about that for the first time in my life. So I'll take that on with me for the next episode.
It's worth taking a look when you go home back to your hotel room tonight. Look up the highlights of the Ashes Test of 82 at Melbourne. It's a classic of the genre. A three run win for England with both of them at the end. What else? What have we missed here? We I don't think we've missed much. Truth be told, can we just go back to England's batting today? By the way, because when we finished last night, it was kind of like the only way that England can put themselves in a position to put any scoreboard pressure on is if they bat for like pretty much a session, and they, broadly speaking, did it. I mean, they added 104, and the majority of them weren't scored by Pope. Pope scores 48 of the 104. It is Hartley, it is Rayan Ahmed who play more aggressively, Pope down the other end. And as I said before, it meant that they offset India's huge first innings, and it became one of those first innings, fourth innings matches. And often it's in the advantage of the side that batted first because the wicket's deteriorating and so it proved.
Pope, Rayan Ahmed, and Tom Hartley, between them, those two partnerships added 144. It's an incredibly influential number of runs. And truth be told, I wasn't paying attention for the first half hour, 45 minutes, because I went, this is just a bit of a sim game moment. Like, the three wickets will fall, England will get maybe 40, okay, and then it will then the match starts, then it's a one day, there's a chase, and that's when we're going to start paying attention. And you're kind of watching, you're going, they're still going, and you're like, they're still going at a good rate, and then Ahmed got out. And we're like, okay, so maybe now it's it's going to happen where the wickets tumble and then India will have a bat. And then Hartley started kind of bopping the spinners back over their heads. You're thinking, blimey, this has gone from England having a chance to England being in a game to England being ahead to maybe should England win? And it just crept up on you, especially when the actual three wickets did fall. They fell for one run at the end. And I was going to save this for the Hall of Fame, but I've got a second one, so I'll do it anyway. Ollie Pope on 196, going to reverse ramp Jasprit Bumrah to get to 200 was phenomenal. It was so good, and he had the best reason ever for doing it. He went, I just thought it'd be quite cool. It'd be quite cool to get to 200 with reverse ramp, wouldn't it? And he went, oh, bowl me a slower ball, bastard. It's the worst, it's the last ball I wanted, basically. And he just said, he gave the professional excuse of Jack Leach was struggling with his knee, so I knew I needed to get a hurry on, basically. But I thought it, and I actually think it makes the innings cooler. I think it makes it better that you got 196. It's like if you're warming up in football, it's actually more cool to hit the woodwork than score a goal. It's more exciting. There's more noise. But he's been hard done by. He was on 195 with three wickets in hand, and he's left without getting a double 100. But no, one of the great innings, one of the great kind of turnaround batting innings. And it was so important, because had it been 20, 30, 40 runs fewer, to say the most obvious thing in the world, had England got fewer runs, it would have been better for India.
Quite. I don't think we're going to see many players out reverse ramping on 196 into the future. So it is worth acknowledging on the way through to the final word, Hall of Fame.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Final Word Hall of Fame is brought to you by Westfield London, Westfield Stratford City. Cam, I can see on my screen here, I've not read the copy before we've recorded. The subheading is Bluey and Hey Dougie, and you having spent a bit of time around my place during the World Cup, you know what a big part of my life Bluey is because of my daughters, and my eldest especially. So let's see how we go here. It's not just the final word with stories they can tell you this week, very good share, because it is National Storytelling Week here in the UK. Oh, that's lovely. And to celebrate this momentous occasion, Westfield London and Westfield Stratford City are welcoming Bluey from Bluey and Dougie from Hey Dougie to the centre next weekend. That's very important information. Between 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. next weekend, come down and meet cricketing superstar Rusty's little blue mate on Friday and Saturday at Westfield London and Westfield Stratford City, where you can collect an exclusive Hey Dougie Westfield badge from the dog himself on Friday and Saturday at Stratford and on Sunday at London. The experience is free, so you can take your own photos and capture the moment. That is brilliant. I am absolutely going to take Winnie to meet Louis next week at Westfield, Stratford City or Westfield, London. What a joy.
I'm excited for you. I'm very excited for you.
This is the equivalent of getting her photo on. It's probably more of a big deal for her than meeting Father Christmas. We went to Euro Disney on Monday when we were in Paris still, and she got to meet Princess Jasmine from Aladdin. So
that's a big day.
Princess Jasmine last week and Bluey next week. She'll be thrilled with that. Westfield, London, Westfield, Stratford City, more extra, less ordinary. Okay, so we are spoilt for choice for nominations today. I just quite liked at the end the 10th wicket partnership, how many balls hit the stumps and required referral upstairs. So there was, there would have been a Spirit of Cricket meltdown had Ben Folkes, when attempting to stump Bumrah, who had looked away and had his feet in the air, jumping in frustration at having not made contact with the sweep. Had that been the end of the Test match, I know Spirit of Cricket's a funny old thing and the way it gets thrown around, I like to believe the criticism would have been levelled where it should have been with Bumrah. But I'm sure there would have been some loud voices saying that Folkes had done the wrong thing or something like that. But yeah, then Wood, first ball when he bowled the next over, lovely strike with the left boot into the middle stump. Then the next delivery down the non-strikers end, he flicked it onto the stumps as well. So there was a lot of action towards the end.
Yeah, it was my Hall of Fames. I've got two. One actually probably should have been early in the show. I loved that Stokes brought Rehan Ahmed back when it was like one wicket to win. I think Ahmed bowled one over in the first 53 overs of the innings or something like that, and he just wasn't playing, and just the opportunity to create heroes was taken, the case of like, you can take the winning wicket within this Test match. And in terms of a strategy point of view, my actual highlight of the day and highlight of the Test match actually is, for the last hour of play, I have to go over to the TalkSport box, so I've got to do some bits and bobs with them, and I get to sit outside looking over the ground, and more often than not joined by Steve Harmison, and he is in constant communication with the England players, in particular Mark Wood, and being there, they're very, very good at sign language. And I was getting the inside scoop of when Wood was bowling to Ashwin, Wood was asking, do I bump him again? And Harmison was like, it was like the Homer Simpson, Monty Burns kind of, if I touch my cap thrice, this is. And Harmison was in agreement with him that he wasn't to bowl another bouncer. He's waiting for the bouncer, so make sure you hit the stumps. Nice full length Yorkers on top of the stumps. And there was another moment where Bairstow said, like, signalled something up to him. I think Joe Root was bowling. And I feel like I'm familiar with cricket kind of shapes. I was like, what's he just said about Root there? And he was like, he's just laughing because he finally turned one. And I was like, he's been ragging it, hasn't he? He's like, but so there we go. Maybe that wasn't true, but I enjoyed that greatly. I think that's okay.
Like the days of Bob Warmer and Hansi Cronje with the walkie-talkie in the 99 World Cup. Yeah. Just Steve Harmison's body language and
set. Absolutely.
There you go. I like Joe Root's wicket celebration. I have no idea what he was doing with his arms when he was carrying on as your lights go out.
That's back
quite
on.
Funny. The lights going out as we're ending the podcast. But Root, whatever Root was doing, it was entertaining. You mentioned Ray and Arved not having a major part in the game. Jimmy Anderson got himself involved on the final day. Imagine being used as a sub-fielder at age 41. But I suppose they wanted his experience out there on the park. And my last nomination is that there was a graphic that flashed up on the television screen, which read out, went through the best figures for a debutant in India. I think that was the categorisation. And Tom Hartley, I'm sure when he was a little boy growing up in Lancashire, he would have said to his parents and said to the people who were coaching him, one day I want to be on a list with Jason Crazier. And now, by virtue of the fact that he's taken a 7-wicket bag, he's on a list with the man they call Subway. So well done, Tom Hartley. Nice to shoehorn Jason Crazier into the podcast before we finish up.
Lovely. The only thing I want to shoehorn, I just want the listeners to understand, I almost died recording this episode. Behind me is one of the largest drops I've ever seen. The wall is about 3 feet. It comes up just above my knee, and I was propped up next to it. And then after we hit record, I realised, had I stumbled, it would have been a live recording of a final word death, which it would have been the final word, to be fair. That would have actually been quite fitting had I gone Blimey. Recording the final word. I think that's a good
Would we still have published? Would have we gone, look, he's said some really insightful things earlier in the show, so we'll put that
I would enjoy,
not,
for, the, for
let's
this,
not consider
as
that.
Social media manager of this organisation, I would have insisted. I insist in the future that if I happen to die whilst we're recording, you do publish it. And you have it on record now.
Let's hope there's never any posthumous recordings required of you and you live a long life.
Oh, thanks.
Right, Cam, it's been a long podcast. It's deservedly been a long podcast, as we said off the front of the show. It's been a very special day for Test cricket, just when Test cricket needed it. Adam Collins and Cam Ponsonby, we'll be back with you next week. When are you off to Vizag?
I'm off to Vizag day after tomorrow. I'm now going to message every single newspaper asking if they want some quotes for tomorrow. And that'll be me for the next 12 hours.
Bring your surfboard. I gather that's big part of the culture over there. All right, second test starts on Friday. We'll be back with a preview show on Thursday. Between times, Jeff and I have a story time in the can, ready to roll, a revisit special. So it's quite a big episode of story time. We've got a weekly show in there. Cam, you and I will probably chat again and do a bit of a wash up once we hear from the various different actors who were involved in today's epic. And that's it for Westfield London, Westfield Stratford City. More extra, less ordinary. This has been an extraordinary test match. That'd be the same we've been doing for centuries. Sorry if I ran out to empty, wrote this so you know what I meant here. I had to go.